We might tell you one before we start here about this sex education bit, you know. This little boy happened to be an only child. And he went to his daddy one day and he said, "Hey, Dad, I want a baby brother to play with." So his dad smiled rather knowingly and he said, "All right, Andy," he says, "tell you what you do." He says, "Why don't you say something in your night prayers and you ask God for a baby brother?" So he thought about it a minute and he, okay, that's a pretty good idea. So for four nights in a row, he prayed for a baby brother. No results. So he gave it up for a bad job and forgot all about it. Anyway, sometime later, there was quite a commotion during the night, and mother and dad got up, and the lady next door came over to babysit for him, and a bag packed, and out the door they went, and, well, Andy fell asleep. But when he woke up the next morning, here was Dad back again, just smiling from ear to ear, and he picked the little fella up, and he said, "Andy," he says, "you know you wanted a little baby brother to play with?" "Yep." "Well, what do you think happened last night? Not only have we got a baby brother, but we've got a baby sister, too. Your mom had twins. Now, aren't you glad you prayed?" Andy thought a minute, and he said, "Yeah, sure am, Dad. But I bet you're glad I quit when I did."
As we go along in our talk, you'll hear us mention our children. Maria and Tracy are 16 and 14. Charlie and Joe, our wrecking crew, are 8 and 7. Anne is 5, and Timothy is 1.5.
And has red hair.
And we're going to give you some ideas on sex education of children, and then we're going to take a break and let you give us some of your ideas.
First of all, we ought to know what we're going to talk about. Many people would say, if they think of the phrase sex education of children, well, this is a matter of teaching a certain amount of biological activity, facts of life to children, and it comes at a certain time, and this is a heart-to-heart talk, and this is all there is to it, you know. We think this is rather poverty-stricken if this is all we think of when we think of sex education. We would suggest that sex education begins at mother's breast and doesn't really end until that child of yours or ours walks up the aisle to begin their life with someone else. Sex education, we would say then, is not merely a learning of certain biological activity, but a total orientation in the field of sex and of sexuality. It isn't only knowing how this thing works, but knowing what I, as a human person, as a man, think of sex, of being a man, and also what my attitudes are toward this and how I will act upon these in my lifetime. After all, the philandering husband knows what the score is, but he's using his facts in a way that's destructive to his own marriage and happiness. So we would hope then, I'm sure you share with us, that we would want to teach our children not merely facts of life, but attitudes and ways of acting. Now, there's a lot of intelligence, brains, and degrees in front of us here tonight. We're not here as academic experts tonight. We're going to speak to you as parents, and we'd suggest that you listen to us as parents. So, to get on with sex education, first of all, we have to realize that what our parents, as a generation, did for us in this field simply isn't enough in our day and age. Very commonly, our parents, aside from the perhaps very fine attitudes they gave us, in terms of what they actually taught us very little. They taught it to us quite late in life, and very often they didn't really teach us at all. Now, perhaps we were not injured too much by this, or perhaps we don't know, but we can't afford this for our children. Time was that home was somewhat of a secluded refuge, and however we sent our children out to school or into the world, they came back to home. And here, within this somewhat private confine, mother and father were able to shape children. This is no longer true. All we do is turn a switch and the world floods into our living room. And we all know this, of course. The printed page, the television, the communications industry is such today that everything out there is now in here. All of the good, but all of the bad. We picked up a Look magazine not so long ago, and there was a beautiful girl on the cover, an actress from Denmark. Had something about sex, so anyway, this was on how many million coffee tables around the country, and I'm sure your children read it too. Here she is. She says that sex is the most important thing in the world. I wouldn't marry a man unless I'd slept with him at least 50 times. What made me tired to think about it, but... If our children read further, and we did, it seems that they have more advanced attitude towards sex over there, and that 98% of the girls are no longer virgins when they marry, but the parents don't mind as long as the children do it in the parents' home and the parents know about it. A more advanced attitude. Well, viewpoint, huh? Our children learn something by that Look magazine. Our children learn something every time they see a sexy ad. And we can't open our eyes anymore today, but we see ads that have something about sex tied into them. You can't even sell a can of drain cleaner unless some babe with a towel around her is dumping it in the toilet, can you? Sex is about us. We live in a sex-saturated world. Our children are being engulfed in this sex saturation from the moment they can open their eyes and listen and look and read. This was not so many years ago. Now, we live with this, okay. The point is, our children are learning something by this. We as adults are somewhat immune to this. It's come upon us rather slowly, and we are formed. Not so our children. They are being formed. They're being formed by us and the world, by the world. This world is teaching them something about sex. Now, what is it teaching them?
First, I think we would want to ask, what would we want our children to know about sex? What fundamentals would we hope that we could give them first? Well, I think we would agree that we would want them to know that sex belongs in marriage. It belongs between a husband and wife. That it is an expression of love. Now, we mean true love. We don't mean, as Hollywood would spell it, L-U-S-T. But we mean a true concern for their partner, a real love. The third thing we would think that God blesses this union of love. And through this union of love, at times, new life appears, children. So we would hope that they would know that sex belongs in marriage, that it's an expression of true love, blessed by God, and at times, new life appearing.
I think most of you would share that with us as a hope for children. And yet, what are they learning from the television drama and from the magazines and everything else that is educating them today? Are they learning that marriage and sex are intertwined, that sex belongs in marriage? How long since you've actually seen a TV drama that has glorified the marvel and the solidity, the sanctity, if you wish, of marriage? Why, of course, not all the fun's before you get married, you know that. Well, it's sort of fun playing around outside of marriage, too. But marriage is sort of a dead end, you know. That apparently turns, it's a goal, but then it turns it off, you know. Certainly they're not being taught that marriage is really very important at all. Are they being taught about love? Well, with all the hoopla of Madison Avenue in Hollywood, the word is repeated and repeated and repeated. But the definition of love that they're being taught, if we sit and think a moment, is really a sexual, self-centered selfishness. It's what I want and what I need. And the song sings, I must have you, dear. I need you, my dear. It's I and it's me and it's mine. It's a selfishness that they're being taught. Very little about what is best for you. God? Well, who's he anyway, huh? Put him there if you wish, but certainly our public world about us ignores him in this respect, and children are usually to be avoided, of course. So we would suggest to you that our children are receiving a very thoroughgoing education about sex, both in terms of facts of life, but more importantly in terms of attitude. And they're being taught a code that is destructive of the very integrity of family life that our culture is based on, that is selfish, that is godless, and that is childless. Now we start from here. All of our children are getting this. If you and we would want our children to learn something we would hope better than this about sex, all right, then this is our job as parents, and that's why we're here tonight.
Many of you probably think that concerned parents face up to the situation today and really explain to their children and instruct the children in what they want them to know in this field. And yet in this wonderfully educated country of ours, with all sorts of educational materials, books, everything available, the statistics show that only one child in 10 actually learns first from his parents what sexual intercourse actually is. One child in 10 is this privileged. Now, it isn't that the parents don't know what the score is. They live this life, but they don't tell their children. They sit back, they say, oh, they're so young, they're so innocent, they'll learn all of this soon enough. We're being very unrealistic. The studies have further shown that we parents are 5 years late in telling our children what they have already learned. We're 5 years late. We simply haven't put on our track shoes and run fast enough to catch up with these little children. They simply are soaking this up, whether we are facing up to it or not. The times are not like what they were when we were children. We say, oh, you know, but they're so innocent. You know, why interrupt? Don't confuse ignorance with innocence. Ignorance is just plain lack of knowledge, not knowing the truth. Innocence is knowing the truth and sticking by it.
And yet, although we as adults know what the score is, we haven't, as a society, told our children. Why don't we talk? Well, we can talk at the bowling alley about sex all night. We're quite comfortable there. Or in a mixed group at a bridge game, talk about sex often enough. Or joke. Here again, we're not uncomfortable. But if one of our children comes to us and pops the big question, that's different, isn't it? Now we back away from it, or we stammer a bit, or we say, oh, you go ask your dad, and he doesn't want to answer it either, you know. Or worse than that, why? We know, we hesitate to say, we feel uncomfortable. This is an emotional reaction. In front of the children, this is different. We feel uncomfortable. Now, why do we feel this way? We come by it very honestly. Our parents taught this to us. They felt uncomfortable when we first asked them these questions. They, as a generation, dodged our questions. They gave to us, by the way they felt and acted in dodging, this also same feeling of prudishness, of Puritanism or Victorianism, or call it what you wish. It's an attitude, and it's ingrained, and it's in all of us to a greater extent or less. We as a culture have been prudish. Now, what does this mean within us? It's nothing that we have made a decision on. We just feel this way. You know, sex is, nice people don't talk about sex. You know, it's for after dark and under the covers, and if God would have really had a mind about him, he'd have figured out a different way to make babies, but this is sort of a concession to man's weakness, you know. A woman has her duty, a man has his rights, and before you're married, you're not allowed to have sex, but after you're married, it's permitted. Not necessarily good, but it's permitted. In this whole line of thought and reasoning, we have, however, tied this type of feeling and thinking with good people, our parents and their like, who we respect. And we've also identified it to a certain extent with organized religious faith. And so we put this then on the side of goodness in our mind's eye, and we say there's something very right about this, because good people gave this to us. And yet we know it's a little fishy and this isn't quite right. But then we turn the other page to the likes of this young lady we mentioned in the magazine, or a great number of our people in our culture today on college campuses and elsewhere, for whom sex is a simple right and a need, a physiological urge that's to be responded to. And for them, there is no such thing anymore as the old story of sin and right or wrong, of laws or rules. And for many today, sex is simply something that my mental health needs, and I'll take it with whom I want, and when I want it, and however I want it, and before, during, outside of marriage, with man, with woman. There's no rule except one for this new libertarian, and this rule simply says, I will not force myself upon another person. My partner must consent. And that's the only rule over here. Now, probably few of you would buy that song either or want it for your children. And yet, this also is in possession in our culture. And what have we got to choose from? This old stuff? And all right, you join us perhaps in rejecting both. But where do we feel? Where do we belong? What do we think? What attitudes and code of action and of right and of wrong? What do we pass on to our children? Well, each of us will find our own place somewhere between these two extremes. But in truth, most of us are at least a little confused. We're not quite sure anymore. And it's because of our adult confusion that we find in our age this almost chaotic confusion in our young people at times.
And yet, as good parents, we want to do what is best for our children. I think we hesitate many times because we think it's such a difficult job. And yet, let me ask you a simple question. Do you, as good loving parents, want to delegate to someone else this wonderful job of telling your own little child how, through mother and father's love, and God blessing it, this little one came into being? I think most of you want to be the person to tell your own child this story of love. If we could only look at it this way and realize how it's a real person-to-person type of communication at home, and it happens along with all the other millions of questions that come. And particularly in those early years, these children aren't so much hearing you as they are reading you, you know. What does Mom think about this? Or what does Dad think about this? Maybe they didn't even hear what you said, and you know often they haven't heard because they keep repeating the same questions over and over. And so it is in this field, that there is this communication, this difference of children, and it's your own child you're talking to. Those of you that have more than one child know what I mean. To the first little one, maybe you're telling her certain facts, and she says, oh, is that right, Mother? Oh, that's beautiful. And maybe sometime later you're talking to the second little one. Identical facts. Her reaction. Yep. Uh-huh. Okay, can I go yet? And it's just this totally different acceptance of the fact. And maybe the second one didn't even get what you were telling her. Doesn't matter. It's your own child. You come back. You build on it as the years go on. And this is what we mean by giving your child this wonderful story of love. And many of you probably think, oh, you know, don't get so shook up. They'll get all that when they get to school. Well, that's sort of, you know, like saying they'll get everything just letter right and they'll do it just perfectly in school, and I don't want to mess this job up. I want them to get the facts just right. That's like saying, now we're not going to tell our son anything about blasting a man into space or any of that because we don't have all the details of that right, so we won't give him any of that. We'll wait till he gets to school. Try it. Which one of your little ones probably doesn't know almost more than you do about how many times he's going to orbit and how long he's going to walk out in space and how they're going to do this and that? They just soak it up from the culture. They get it, whether you want them to or not. The same is true about sex education. They'll get this information whether you program it or not. Take your choice of where you want them to get it and how you want them to get it, because they'll get it. The other thing is, as it comes in school, it comes as a health class or a biology class, and these come as facts, you know, just plain facts. But what we're talking about tonight are not just plain facts. We're talking about a story of love, of about seeing love, feeling love, being loved. And this is what you, as good parents, can uniquely give best to your own child.
You see, we teach love and many things to our children, not by what we tell them, but by how we live out our lives. We could teach them about marriage, for instance, and we could say, oh yes, marriage is a very marvelous thing, and fidelity, and this is sacred, and great respect. And yet if one of you fellas came home from the office one night and with the children listening told your wife about the funniest darn thing happened. You know the boss and that new clerk typist? And he's been playing around with her and his wife doesn't suspect a thing and the two of you get the biggest laugh out of this. And the children here, you've taught them something about what you really think about marriage. Or gather around a supper table and we're speaking of our aging parents. And of course the children are with us. And the problem is that they really can't stay alone anymore, you know. They're getting pretty doppy and they fall over and they left the gas on and all this sort of thing. And we've got to put them somewhere. And can't your sister Mary or my brother Joe or maybe it's the nursing home or anywhere, we've got to get them somewhere, but we don't want them. We don't want to take the responsibility for the old folks, and so we plot and scheme how we can keep ourselves from having the burden, if you wish, of the old folks. You know what we've done? We've given our children a very vivid education on how to handle us when we become those aging parents. And so with love. No child ever learned love out of a book. Love is an experience that must be known and felt in childhood. The child growing from an unloved home, strife-torn, bickering, upset, sometimes as an adult is an actual emotional cripple, incapable of ever really learning to love another person. We learn love by loving and by being loved in the unselfish sense. And if sex is anything, it relates to love. You know, sex is something like electricity. Unharnessed and out of control, it's an atomic bomb or it's lightning. And it destroys. And yet channeled within the rules and put to proper use, it heats and warms our homes over the years. And so with sex, identically so. Unchanneled, it's destructive. But otherwise, it is that one of a number of things that makes life worth living and keeps us together in happy harmony in our homes.